Rick Stevens, financial advisor with FRS Financial Group. Securities and advisory services offered through LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA SIPC. The opinions voiced in this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision. For more detailed information regarding any of the topics discussed on today's show, please call 719-500-8700. This is Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial. Here's your host, Rick Stevens.
Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group. This is your host, Rick Stevens, and folks, remember that this is your show. If you've got those questions you would like to have answered, if there is a topic you would like for us to go a little bit more in-depth on in a future Money Matters episode, you can feel free to reach out to me at 719-500-8700. You can also send me an email, rstevens@frsfinancialgroup.com, or simply go to our website, frsfinancialgroup.com. Click that contact tab up there in the top right-hand corner. Send us that question. Send us that topic you would like to know a little bit more about, because we would love to hear from you. Well, folks, this week on Money Matters, we are joined in studio for his first Money Matters experience by Dan Cushell. Dan, how are we today?
I am doing great. It is so great to be with you here today. It's beautiful, the temperature. You know, we had a little bit of snow over this week, but man, this weekend is going to be awesome.
You know, the crazy part is, because I live up on the north end of town, Dan, I got up this morning and we were nice and beautiful up there, and I'm hearing on KRDO where they got the plows here and this one's delayed and their accidents down here. I'm going, you mean they got snow at the bottom of the hill and not the top?
That's right. That is really strange how the snow kind of cuts the city in half.
Yes.
You know, and some people get it and some people don't.
Yeah, and I had to remind TJ this morning because he always likes to remind me that I get the snow and he doesn't. I like to remind him this morning that, you know, he got the snow today.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
He was enjoying that. So, folks, this week on Money Matters, we're going to be talking about some of those things that, Dan, don't make a whole lot of sense out there. All these different kinds of ads, whether it's television, whether it's on the radio, these different types of folks out there that are, quite frankly, just trying to sell things.
Yes. And you know, and when, you know, in any commercial, they all try to get your business, but they don't talk about the risk. They don't talk about things that, you know, you have to do to get involved in it. And that makes it kind of confusing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we are going to try to make sense of that nonsense today. And there is a lot of nonsense out there. And oftentimes, Dan, it comes out because we've got fear going on.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you how many times I have heard really, quite frankly, in probably the last 5 years, the markets are at all-time highs. They're going to absolutely come tumbling down. And then we saw what happened in March of 2020 in that first quarter, and markets pulled back about 30%. Oh, there it is. The bottom's going to fall out. And by the end of the year, they went from minus 30 to plus 20.
Right, right.
2022, we had a rough year, both on the equity side with the S&P down almost 20%. We also had the bond markets that were down, depending on which market you look at, somewhere around 13%. Only the third time in history, both the equity and the fixed income side were both down in the same year. And the first time they were ever down double digits in the same year.
Wow.
So again, there's that uneasiness that folks have out there. And sometimes I wonder if the folks who are producing some of those commercials to try to get folks to buy things like the precious metals and the artwork and the real estate and the crypto, remember that we had 2023 where the market was up about 24%, because
exactly.
They seem to forget that piece.
Exactly.
That's in there. And, you know, there are cycles, right? There are cycles that all these things go through. And folks, if you have listened to, if you've listened to Money Matters for any amount of time, you've heard us talk about those cycles. And quite frankly, the crazy cycle that I will often call it, is that fear that cycles back into what I believe it was Alan Greenspan called irrational exuberance. And oftentimes, the using those emotions are the absolute worst way. Dan, I know it comes as a shock here. It's the absolute worst way to do your investing,
right,
is emotionally.
And especially when you have those people that are trying to persuade you and they're trying to, you know, pry on your fears and things like that. When you're just sitting there and you're hearing all this, that's the worst time to actually make an investment decision.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, oftentimes, and fear is one of those primal sort of things, mm-hmm, those emotions in us, and it prompts us to do things that are very irrational,
yeah,
right? We will make bad decisions when we are making them out of fear, because we also have that desire on the flip side to be safe.
Right.
Safe, and again, nothing wrong with being safe. If you've done any research into Maslow's hierarchy of needs, safety is right there at, mm-hmm, the base level. That's really what we're looking for. But the big thing, especially when we're talking about, and we're going to go a little bit more in depth on some of these different alternative investments that are being offered out there. One of those things that we don't get to see about to make that logical, rational choice are indexes, because people can see the S&P 500, right? We hear about it on the news every day. Here's what the S&P is doing. Here's what markets are doing. The Dow Jones is up. The Dow Jones is down. The NASDAQ is sideways. We hear about all of that. There aren't indexes to tell us about what's going on in precious metals or artwork or real estate or cryptocurrencies, right? There aren't indices out there, mm-hmm, for folks to look at and watch and see, is it up, is it down, is it sideways, is it spinning, you know, crazily up, crazily down, or, you know, just what's going on. And because of that, folks think most of those things are safe. There's some bad news.
Oh,
with that,
no,
stuff. Yes, some bad news with that stuff, Dan. Risk exists in whatever sort of investment we're looking at.
Right.
Anything out there. One of the things, and especially when you see either a down market, or as we've had the last couple years, some inflation upticks,
mm-hmm,
one of those big pushes is always precious metals, precious metals, precious metals. And yes, there's a place in a portfolio for precious metals. In fact, I just had this conversation with one of the other advisors in our office about a week ago. And we were talking about the precious metal parts, and he was talking about adding some into their portfolios. And sort of that baseline concept in our world is you really don't want more than 5 to 10% of an overall portfolio in precious metals. And the reason for that is if we go back to 2012, so, mm-hmm, going back in the last 12 years, the upside of gold has averaged 1.3%.
Ooh.
So, ouch, it's not big growth.
Yeah.
But realistically, if we also look at what has inflation been in the last, you know, 12 to 15 years,
mm-hmm,
it's really been about 2%.
Yeah.
So gold is what we typically think of as a hedge against inflation. And in fact, if we go all the way back to 1980, gold as a precious metal has just about a 3% annual growth rate.
Wow.
And inflation since 1980 has been 2.9%. So right in line with what inflation does.
And all those commercials, you know, that are pushing gold and things like that, they don't talk about the high fees. You know, they don't talk about the commissions on the purchase and the storage of this and,
yes,
you know, the sale of the physical metals. I mean, that's the interesting. They talk about you need this in your portfolio these days, but they don't talk about those things.
Exactly. Those are those pieces that, you know, if you call that 1-800 number and,
yeah,
say, I need to be doing this and make this happen in my portfolio, that they may kind of gloss over a little bit, because if you are actually buying the physical metals, oftentimes they will come with that, you know, whether that's a commission, and typically the commissions are on both sides of that as well. You got to pay X percent to buy and X percent to sell.
Right.
So if you're paying, you know, say 3-5% on both sides of that, we've got to see a 10% appreciation to break even. A lot of times we don't think about that sort of stuff out there.
Right.
And it's one of those crazy things. So when we're thinking about growth, metals are not where the growth is. Metals are sort of kind of like the bonds in your portfolio, that fixed income piece that we're trying to steady some things, kind of follow along with what goes on in the interest rate world or in the inflation world, so that inflation basically isn't eating our portfolio.
So let me understand this. So you have the metals, that is sort of a base, but that's not going to make you any extra money, those types of investments. They're
exactly.
You're just going to have it, and you won't lose any money, but you won't make any money as much as other investments.
Right. Well, actually, even in the metals world, you can lose because the value is
that's
a spot
true.
Price.
That is
right?
true.
They trade all day long, all day, every day, and those values do fluctuate. And we've seen this happen. I oftentimes tell folks, you know, if we're looking at a portfolio and we're looking at that portfolio across time, what you kind of see is if you look out at the front range and you're just following along with how the mountains are going, you got the up, you got the down, you got the up, you got the down. But if you are going from the north up by Monument all the way to Pikes Peak, it's generally an upward trend on that whole thing.
Right.
The way metals trade, they look more like an EKG. It's pretty flat. Then you see an up and a down, and then it's pretty flat.
Ooh.
And then you see an up and a down, and then it's pretty flat. So if you actually look at some of the way these things trade, in January of 1980, gold was trading at $850 an ounce. A couple days ago, it's at $2,000 an ounce. And the only way it gets there are because we see along that course of time, there's an up, there's a down. Now, the down doesn't come all the way back down. And then it flatlines. And then it's up and a down, and another flatline. And it's really crazy to look at some of that.
But when it goes up pretty good.
Yes.
Right? And then you're thinking, wow, what an investment.
Right.
You know, but then there's times where it doesn't do anything for years.
Exactly.
Right? Okay.
Exactly. And you know, one of those discussions I get in with folks a lot about is that worry of the economy, what's gonna happen, everything's gonna come crashing down. And I try to take a look at that from that logical perspective. And you know, oftentimes, should I buy gold? Because, you know, what if the economy collapses? And I start with, well, gold is $2,000 an ounce. Silver is $20 an ounce. One of those things you could take to the grocery store to buy bread with. One of those you can't.
Right.
Right. We're not taking that 1 ounce gold coin and shaving some of it off.
Go get some bread.
Exactly. So if you think we're going to have to use precious metals to trade, go with the silver because it's going to be more useful.
Oh, that's
something
good advice.
Like that.
Yeah.
And then the crazy guy comes out of me. And I will say, but if you really think everything's collapsing, the precious metals you need are not gold and silver. They're brass and lead.
Really?
Well, that's what ammo's made out of.
Yeah, that's true. That is absolutely true. That is true. When it all bottoms out, you're going to have that lead.
Yes.
The other thing too is that, you know, the dealers that you know, represent these types of things, a lot of times they misrepresent what the market outlook is for this.
Yes.
So that's really important to keep in mind.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
They don't do a good job and talk about the risk associated with these metals.
Exactly. You know, the CFTC, because we live in an alphabet soup world, that's the Commodities Futures Trading Commission.
Right.
They have actually issued warnings about precious metal dealers because, yes, they're going to misrepresent the market outlook. I actually had a conversation about 2 years ago with a client who said, you know, he was listening to this program, and this guy said, you got to go to silver because silver's going to be over $100 an ounce by the end of the year. And I think at that point in time, it was trading at about $24 an ounce, and that was like the middle of the summer. And by December, it was 17.
Oh,
it wasn't $100. It was $17.
Right.
And silver has never traded at $100 an ounce. Even at its absolute peak, it was trading at 48.
And yet they talk about this.
Exactly. They talk about it like that. They get people in to sell them their silver, and they just say, hey, we can say whatever because, quite frankly, they're actually unregulated. Right? You do not have to have any particular securities licensing to sell physical gold.
Wow.
Right, I have to have my Series 7,
right,
which is my stockbroker license. I have my 66, which is the investment advisor license. because I hold the investment advisor license, I am a fiduciary.
Mm-hmm.
I have to talk to the folks in their best interest. I can't put, you know, my interest ahead.
Right.
And anytime we're talking metals, I have to go out and say, okay, these are the fees that we have to charge for holding it. These are the commissions that I will get paid, both on the buy and on the sell, and all of those different parts. But a lot of the dealers out there aren't regulated to the point where they have to disclose that
right.
sort of information.
And as a fiduciary, I mean, it is your responsibility to have the best interest of the people you represent in mind.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, you'd lose your license.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's what the license is for.
Yep. And there are brokers all across there, folks who are no longer allowed to work in the industry anymore. The one I always bring up because he's the name everybody remembers is Bernie Madoff.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if you go to brokercheck.finra.org, I think it's a .org. It might be a .com, but it's brokercheck.finra.org, I think,
mm-hmm.
and type in Bernard Madoff, you will see that he is barred from working in the industry.
Wow.
And you'll see that he worked
for
in the industry
reason.
For like 40 years and
yeah.
all of a sudden had one disclosure and he's barred forever.
Right, right.
So those are the things when you do some things in my world that are shady,
right.
you lose the ability to ever work in the industry again.
Right. And that's why you need to deal with people that are licensed.
Exactly.
You know, they have your best interest in mind.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. So you know, you hear the precious metals pieces. The one I'm hearing again, and I always laugh. I always laugh when I hear this, are the folks who are trying to get people to invest in artwork, right? Artwork. You can invest in all of these different, you know, artists and their paintings and this, that, and the other. The most recent commercial was talking about how much they sold one of Banksy's paintings for.
Really?
Yes. And,
wow.
And I'm hearing that, and I'm going, A, I got to go look up Banksy because I'm not exactly a pop artist kind of a guy. So I look up some of the stuff and I went, huh, interesting. It's like my kids could have done some of that. But, you know, I digress a little bit.
No,
there.
I totally agree with that analogy. It's interesting, too, that according to the statistics you gave me, most people are some, as you just mentioned, they say that the artwork is appreciated like 125%.
Yeah,
times
125 times
what the
S&P 500 done, and they grab some random year, like in the last 26 years. Like, what?
Yeah,
there is no way you're up 126 times what the S&P 500 is up.
Wow.
But what they do is they're not actually talking about the artwork itself. They're actually, when they present this, because I went to the website, I looked it all up going, what
interested.
Are you guys talking
you're
about?
You're like, wow, that's a great investment.
Yeah, why am I not
yeah.
selling this
yeah.
if that makes, you know, that much sense? And what they've done is they've made up an index. They call it the Art Price 100. And it has absolutely no bearing on the actual artwork that the company holds. And in fact, their disclosure on this says the Art Price 100 is comprised of the art market's 100 most successful artists without any other aesthetic or preferential consideration based on the auction revenue over the previous 5 years. Now, the first thing I look at that is go, you're giving me auction data from the last 5 years, but you're comparing that for the last 26. Where are you making this stuff up?
Wow.
So they're kind of messing with some things here. They say we also apply a liquidity criterion. For each artist, at least 10 works, including their prints and excluding their prints and multiples, must have been auctioned annually for them to be included in the calculations. Then my favorite part. There are significant differences between art investments and stocks. Yes, yes, there are.
Very significant.
And past performance does not guarantee future results. See important disclosures, and there's a link actually on their website. And then my favorite part. This particular company out here promoting this does not provide investments in financial products that mirror the Art Price 100. So basically what they're saying is, we're telling you about this made-up index, and we have nothing that actually deals and
compares
follows
to it. Yeah.
What's going on there.
Wow. That is crazy.
Yeah.
And there are people actually doing this.
Yes. Yeah,
they're wasting their money.
Yep, I probably get one or two phone calls a week. Hey, what do you think about the investing in art? Oh, let me tell you, do you have an hour to just listen?
Wow. That's a sellable opportunity.
Yes. Yeah, and you know, the crazy part is, again, the pitch for most of these comes out of fear. Are you worried about what's going to be going on in the market?
Exactly.
We don't know when the crash is going to happen. And that's true. Many times I have said, you know, my crystal ball's in the shop. It's a little fuzzy. It's not exactly perfect. Can't tell you what's going to happen in the market Thursday next week. But I can give you a general idea of what the next 10 years should hold.
Right.
And we can make those sort of predictions looking out over a longer period of time. And quite frankly, and we'll talk about this a little later on when we start talking about that risk and having that mm-hmm. proper portfolio, but we can mitigate some of that risk, some of that pullback risk, but you always have to give up something on one end to get the other. And typically, when we talk risk, if you want less risk, you're going to see less growth.
Right.
And we just got to figure out what the right balance in your particular world happens to be when it comes to that part.
Right. It's interesting, too, how people make investments. You know, they want to be informed, and that's what you do best. I mean, you can answer the questions on the art and, you know, the precious metals and kind of make it and make sense of it so that people can be informed when they make these decisions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's one of those things. I actually sat down with a gentleman a couple weeks ago who had been, in the market for years and was looking for somebody local. He had moved out here not that long ago from the Midwest, was looking for somebody local. And we sat down and talked about different things. And he said, you know, in the hour I've sat here with you, I've learned more about my investments than the other guy taught me in the last 25 years.
Exactly.
Because it's that old teacher in me that says it's important to understand.
It is.
Right? You may not need to know how every piece and nuance of a portfolio is put together, but it is your money. You need to be comfortable mm-hmm. and have some kind of an understanding of what's going on with
right.
it.
Right. And it's easier to make a decision based on the information provided. Because you may not have all the information, or you think you have it, and it's not the right information, and you make bad decisions based on that. So that's the benefit of doing business and learning from people like you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, one of the other pieces that I hear, I won't exactly use the gentleman's name, but we hear things from him across the spectrum, television, radio, wherever.
And people are yelling out the name right now, as a matter of fact.
Yes, yeah. Yes, they are. he happens to share the same first name as my oldest, okay. Grant.
Okay.
So you can probably make up that last name very quickly there.
Okay.
And you know, they're all this push. Oh, real estate, that's your safe investment. And my first thought was, I remember 2007, 8,
yeah.
and
Ouch.
9.
Ouch.
In fact, the house that I had at that point in time, in the Chicago suburbs, only recently is back to what I paid for it in 2005.
Oh, ouch.
We're talking 17 years later.
Just to
it
get back.
Finally came back to what
2005.
I paid in 2005.
Man.
Yes. So that's one of those things that I have kind of tracked along the way, just out of pure curiosity to go, whatever really happened in that part of the country. But they talk about how safe things are, and we talked about the REITs, the mm-hmm. real estate investment trusts, you know, a few shows back, and if folks want that real big in-depth sort of thing, they can go find the archive version, where they get the KRDO podcast. Okay. I did hear we're now on Spotify. Is that
yep.
Spotify? Is that the newest
yep.
piece on there? So
yep.
we can find stuff through that. But one of the biggest pieces with that real estate investment trust. And yes, real estate is a nice part of a portfolio to have. And again, as I am building portfolios, there are different funds out there that will encompass real estate. I like real estate as a sector, maybe 3, 4, 5% in a portfolio. Don't put everything in there, and especially not in a REIT because they're pretty illiquid. Most
oh.
times when you put your money in, you cannot get it back out.
Right.
There are basically two things that in general will allow you to get money back out of a REIT. One, you don't get to get it out. Your beneficiaries do because you're dead.
Right.
They will cash it out then. Or they have some sort of a liquidation event and because they are going to basically revalue what they do and go from a non-traded to a publicly traded REIT, and they've got to do some different kind of things, and they're going to buy back your shares in this REIT to put it out on some kind of an exchange somewhere, whether that's a NASDAQ, whether that's the Chicago Board of Exchange, you know, Pacific Stock Exchange, the New York, right, whatever the case may be. They're going to try to buy back shares. Rarely, if ever, are you going to get what you paid for that. And, you know, Dave Ramsey talks about paying the stupid tax.
Mm-hmm.
I have paid the stupid tax with zeros before. Prior to my work in the investment world, as a teacher, I had a financial advisor who said, you know what, REIT is a great thing. You'll get 8% per year, yada, yada, yada. Went through it all. We put $50,000 in. That was 2007.
And you still haven't recouped
2014,
it?
They had a liquidation event because they were going to go public.
Mm-hmm.
I got $35,000 back. I
man.
Paid $15,000 in stupid tax.
Ouch.
Because I didn't, at that point, understand what a REIT really was.
Right.
And I run into clients all the time. Hey, this advisor sold me this REIT, and I can't get out of it. And unfortunately, that's the case a lot of times.
So it's the tax risk.
Yes.
That's the big part
That's the big part. Same thing on being totally illiquid. You can't just cash it out whenever. Another part is, and this is something they don't always, especially the advisors that like to sell them, don't always tell you, and that's, you know, REIT X, whatever this one is here, has an 8% guaranteed low-end cash flow sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But what they fail to tell you is it's not 8% profit that it's paying you or above every year. You know, year one, if they make a 14% profit, they're allowed to keep 5% of it. They got to pay out 95% of their profit. So year one, you might get, you know, if they do a 14%, you might get a 12 because they've kept a little piece. Year two, if they're right at 8, they may boost it a little bit with the previous year's profits. Year three, if it only does, say, 6%, you're getting 8% of your investment back, but 2% of that comes from what you put in.
Oh.
So if you put in $100,000,
yeah,
well, they're going to give you $6,000 of the profit and $2,000 of your own dollars.
Oh, my goodness.
So those are not always explained very well.
Right.
Because now you went from owning $100,000 worth to only $98,000
right.
worth. So the following year, your 6% is actually going to be less. It's no longer $6,000.
Wow.
So
by the time you put that money in, whatever you put in, you can already count on a loss.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Wow.
And once in a while, there will be somebody out there who is a totally third party. They kind of prey on folks wanting to get out as best they can, and they will literally offer you pennies on the dollar. They'll offer you, you know, 5% of the actual value or 10%. Some of them I've even seen offer up to 20% of your actual value. But sometimes because folks have put way too much in, they will jump at that and say, I need the cash.
I got to get out.
Worry about the other 80%.
Yeah.
I'll just deal with it.
Wow. And they know that.
Yes.
Oh, that's the worst part.
It is.
They know you're going to want that money, and they're going to take full advantage of it.
Absolutely.
On a REIT.
Absolutely.
Mm.
And that last piece that, you know, we're starting to hear a little bit more about, again, is the cryptocurrency world.
Yeah.
Right? Those are the digital currencies. And really, I had this wonderful conversation. I use wonderful in quotes. Wonderful conversation with a young man a couple of years ago who was trying to tell me that, you know, the digital currencies are much better because this fiat currency that we're all using put out there by the governments is just garbage. And I said, you know what the definition of a fiat currency is, right? He goes, yeah, it's a currency that has no actual backing behind it, nothing of value. I said, what do you think the digital currencies are?
Yeah.
What are crypto? There's nothing of value behind crypto either. All it is proof of a transaction.
That's a great point.
All that it is. So there's nothing of value that backs the currency. The other part of that is there's also no regulation of cryptocurrencies. None. Zip. Zero. Nobody regulates them yet.
Wow.
They are totally decentralized. And when you get a currency that is decentralized, we may remember the FTX debacle. Most recently with Sam Bankman-Fried
mm-hmm.
and all of the basically fake dollars puffing up what the FTX trading system was, what their token was, that have now virtually disappeared.
Right.
The other part of this is, in that cryptocurrency world, Dan, there is massive volatility. I was actually looking at an ETF for a client the other day because they were really wanting, you know, can I get into crypto? And my first thought is, we're not going to hold the actual crypto. So many different pieces out there. We'll hold some ETFs maybe. And I was looking at one in particular that in 2022 was down 85%, but in 2023 was up 220%.
Wow.
That's a crazy, crazy, did I mention crazy? That is a crazy roller coaster.
Right. But and most people get in, they look at that 200%, you know, and they think, wow, this is going to be great. I'm going to be rich.
Yeah.
But they don't see the downside.
No, they miss that 80 part. And the crazy thing is, let's say that you got lucky and you hit it on the year that was a plus 200. So maybe you had $100 worth. You hit it lucky. You got a plus 200 year. So your 200% up brought you up to $400. And then you got the minus 80 year. That technically you're still up from where we started at that point. But that actually drops you back down to just about where you started.
Yeah.
Because you're plus 200 and see where everything is in there. It's crazy.
What about those people that want to get into cryptocurrency on a short-term basis?
They need to hold on.
Okay.
Because it can be a very wild ride.
Okay.
There is it's not unusual in any single day to watch a cryptocurrency go up or down 10%.
In a day.
In a day.
In one day.
Yes.
Wow.
So it's not unusual to see that. Folks want to get in there and do that. What I always tell them is there's a reason you don't want to look at the value of the investment every single day.
Mm.
Because
and there are people that do that.
Oh, there are people who have it constantly up. Yeah. You know, they'll have three monitors in front of them, two for work and one
it's
for
going
whatever
down.
They're trading.
Oh, it went back up.
Yes.
Or, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You will drive yourself absolutely nuts.
I believe it.
If you continue to do that.
Wow.
Well, folks, we are up against that break in today's show. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about some of those different risk levels that are out there. We're also going to talk about how to properly allocate those different assets that you've got, whether that's in your retirement account, your investment account, whatever the case may be. So stick around. We will be right back.
Money affects each of us in different ways. Sometimes it's a source of stress and fear. Sometimes it's a source of comfort and security. Whatever your perspective, it's always good to get a second set of eyes on your finances to help serve as a guide. If you are looking for that guidance, call FRS Financial Group at 719-500-8700 to schedule your complimentary appointment. And remember to tune into Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group here on KRDO, Saturday mornings at 9 and Sunday at noon. Products and services offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC.
Welcome back, everybody, to Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial Group. Rick Stevens here in studio with Dan Cashel. We are talking about, Dan, we're hoping to make a little sense of the nonsense out
there.
Right? We've talked a little bit about some of those alternative investments that folks might be hearing about, whether that's on the radio, on TV, you know, you see the pop-up ads, whatever. Yes.
Yeah.
There are a lot, and there are different types of risk actually involved, not just with alternative investments, but with investments in general. One of those risks is the business risk, right? That's the basic viability. Is this business going to still be in business later?
Right.
We always have to ask that question, whether we're investing in it in, you know, Microsoft or Google or whatever through there, or if it's, you know, hey, we've gone to this particular dealer for precious metals. I don't know if they're going to be there next week. They may, you know, go out of business. You could have any wild kind of things that happen, whether that's, you know, it's a family-owned shop and, you know, the owner passes away and the kids don't want to run the shop anymore, so they're selling out to somebody else. All kinds of that exists out there. We've also got the credit risk that's out there, right? That's the risk that if we're investing in what we typically would call a fixed income product, that's the risk that borrower is not going to be able to pay back what they borrowed, right? So there's credit risk out there. If we're investing in things that are maybe outside of the U.S., we have a country risk.
Wow.
Right? There's a geopolitical risk out there. We did talk a little bit about this one. There's liquidity risk. Mm-hmm. Can I get my money back? And there's volatility risk, right? That fluctuation in the value of the investment. Does it have a long enough track record? Can I kind of predict and understand what might happen in the next 5, 10, 15 years over that time frame? And one of the crazy things, there are certain things that are fairly predictable. And you know, I started the year talking about some of those things going on in 2024 that are going to help predict what goes on in the market. That's everything from the Federal Reserve being expected to start pulling rates down. Mm-hmm. Now, some folks thought that was happening in March. I actually tend to believe Jerome Powell when he said higher for longer. I don't think they will start to pull until maybe June, July at the earliest. Not that I'm a conspiracy theorist, but I think they're most likely going to start pulling back in September.
For the election.
Well, I didn't say that out loud.
I beg your pardon.
It might just be something 6 weeks after that Fed meeting. But, you know,
yeah.
Might be a good time to start pulling those rates back at that point in time. So we talked
about... Make things look better.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we talked about what markets do when we're in a pullback cycle. We talked about what markets do the year after a plus 20%. We talked about what markets do in a presidential election.
Because there are that's history. History
exactly.
Numbers are
and we've
prevalent.
Got just, you know, like 120 years of that
worth.
History.
Yeah.
So it's kind of some important information along the way.
May happen the same way.
Kinda. Yeah. Pretty close. So there's certain things that we look at on here that we can start to make some of those predictions, those projections. And ultimately, as we're putting together a portfolio for folks, we've got to think about really all the different pieces. Yes, equities, right? That stock ownership should be a part of that portfolio. Depending on how aggressive you are, you may have some fixed income components in there. There's a likelihood that you're going to have some of those alternative investment pieces in there. Yes, there are going to be pieces that are real estate based. There might be pieces that are precious metal based. But we're not going to go with a 100% precious metal portfolio. We're not going to go with a 100% real estate portfolio because that's kind of following that old saying of you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket.
Right.
And when 100% of what you've got is
there, gone.
That's in one basket.
Yeah.
So that's some of those pieces, right? Building that portfolio. There's been research done that shows that about 90% of your return is actually based on the right allocation of your portfolio. There are other parts that are, yes, there's, you know, did you get into this portfolio in January versus in June? There are other pieces that are part of, well, was it a 5-star fund versus a 4-star versus a 3-star? But the biggest piece of that, right, if you return 10% in your portfolio, well, 9% of that 10% came from the right allocation. That other last piece came from a variety of other different factors in there. So most of what we get in our overall return comes from what's in that portfolio. And the way that we reduce risk in there is just we adjust the allocation.
Ah.
So rather than going, nope, I'm getting totally out of the technology side of things.
I'm going to lower it.
We're actually just going to go instead of, you know, maybe 20% exposure in the technology sector to maybe 10% exposure in that technology sector. The aggressive growth portfolios, these are the ones that follow the market ups and downs, and sometimes they are even greater than the ups and greater than the downs. Most of the folks that I deal with that are in those aggressive portfolios are those folks who are in their maybe early to mid-50s and under.
Mm.
And the reason for that is we have time on our side. So yes, I'm one of those guys, right? I will be 50 in August this year. My portfolio is still an aggressive allocation. 2022, I took a big ride down. 2023, I took a big ride back up because I have time.
And you're a patient.
I'm not going to retire for at least 10 years, probably closer to 15.
Right.
My youngest is 9, so I've got to wait till this kid's out of college before I can go, oh, I don't need as much income anymore.
Right.
So I've got years. I've got time. I can ride that up and down. My dad, however, retired at the end of 2019. He has been retired for 4 years. He doesn't have time to make up what's going down in that portfolio. He's not generating income by working anymore. He can't throw more money into it. So we can't ride as big of a roller coaster. So he is in a conservative growth portfolio.
Okay.
Which rides about 60% of the market ups and downs. Was he down in 2022? Yes, he was down a little bit in 2022. He was also up a bit in 2023. And they're really designed, these portfolios are designed to get specific portions of what's in there. So a growth portfolio, oftentimes that will fall anywhere from what we would call a 90-10 down to a 70-30. So that's the split percentage-wise between equities and fixed income. So a growth portfolio is designed to catch about 80% of market ups and downs. Conservative growth, that's the traditional, quote-unquote, 60-40.
Okay.
You may see some as high as a 70-30. You may see some as low as a 50-50. But it's generally a 60-40 portfolio, which means 60% equities, 40% fixed income, designed to catch about 60% of your market ups and downs. Income, this is the, I'm just trying to generate some money here.
Right.
Looking about a 40-60 split-ish, trying to generate a few percent per year. Again, you're going to follow about 40% of market ups and downs. And even the folks that are on that very, very, very low end of the risk scale, that conservative income group, we're still tracking maybe about 20% of market ups and downs. We still keep, you know, anywhere from 15 to maybe 25% in the equity side because mm-hmm. we still want a little bit of growth. But for the most part, we're only putting that fixed income, those different types of bonds in that portfolio. Because really what we're trying to do is get that that giant roller coaster out and kind of ride that little kiddie coaster that has that little nice small wave.
Where you feel like you're getting a little bit, but it's not that big of a risk.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And when we think about the growth targets, right, we talk about that percentage part, but those growth targets in there, that aggressive growth, if we're looking out over that 10-year period, we're shooting for 10% or better in any given 10-year period. I don't care if it's 2000 to 2010, if it's 2010 to 2020, if it's 2050 to 2060, if it's 1980 to 1990. We're building the portfolio to try to generate that 10% year-over-year growth.
No less than 10%.
Right.
Okay.
And yes, some years you're going to see a minus 20, but the next year you might see a plus 30.
Right.
So it's in that grand scheme, in that big picture, that's what we're really looking for. We've got to be willing to ride that roller coaster.
Mm-hmm.
But for those folks that, you know, are those Dave Ramsey followers, when Dave talks about 10%, 12%, it's an aggressive growth portfolio that he's talking about.
Right.
And that's the one that when we also talk about that rule of 72, tell folks if you're averaging 10%, rule of 72 says you take 72 divided by 10, your rate of return. That tells you how long it takes for your money to double without you adding anything. That gives us a nice clean 7 years. And for a lot of folks, when we say, okay, I need $1 million portfolio when I'm 70 years old, what does that take? Well, then I say if we need $1 million at 70 and we don't do anything to it, well, you back that. If we're in an aggressive growth, you back that out 7 years. So at 63, it needs to be $500,000. You back that out seven more years. At 56, it needs to be $250,000. You back it out seven more. At 49, you need $125,000. And that's usually when they go, that's it. Yeah, if we're aggressive in
right.
what we're doing.
And there are risks.
Yes, and there are risks. And we talk about, you know, you're going to ride it all the way up and all the way down. And we're not going to try to time the market. We are going to be very systematic about this. We are going to say, hey, this is the right allocation. Each year as I am rebuilding portfolios, I make some minor tweaks. I'm not necessarily changing the percentages that I have, say, in the large cap space, because my aggressive portfolio, if I've got, say, 40% allocated to large, there's a portion of that that's to growth. There's a portion of that that's to value. I will also tilt a little bit here and there based on maybe some sectors that look like they will probably perform well. So, like, my portfolios this year have a little tilt toward the healthcare sector. because we saw 2023 as a bad year in the healthcare sector. And where I think we're at in our economic cycle, healthcare should be coming back into favor. It's actually one of the better performers so far this year as a sector. So there are some tilts that I will make a little bit here and there. I'm not the wholesale guy. I'm not the guy who's going to make changes every week, every month, even every quarter. We're that strategic, long-term, we'll adjust the quote-unquote big adjustments or the big tilts in any given year. Usually 6 months in, I might make a small tweak here or there. I might go from, you know, instead of 12% in a large growth, maybe the large value is doing better, so I'll bump that up a couple percent and pull the large growth down to a 10. You know, maybe bump a large value up. But we're not going to, you know, wholesale sell everything out, create it again from new. Because I'm a big believer, and I have convictions. It was funny. I have a colleague up in Denver that that I share my portfolios with. And every year, he'll take a look at mine when he's working on building his. And he goes, "You really do stick to your convictions, don't you?" Yes. Yes,
that's
I do.
That's good, though.
Because that's my belief. Yeah. This is the conviction. And yes, if something's bad, it's one of those years that it was bad. But guess what? That's oftentimes followed by the next year being really good. And if I make the change to something, quote unquote, safer, I'm going to miss the ride back up.
Right.
And with clients, that's what I preach not to do. You don't hit the bottom and sell. If you've ridden it down,
ride
it was
it
a good
up.
Idea. Yeah, we're going to ride it back up. It's still a good idea.
Yeah.
It still works for what we're trying to do here.
Right.
So that aggressive growth world, right, that's our 10% plus target, right, over that 10-year period. The growth world, these are folks that usually are probably, in a lot of cases, within about 5 years of their retirement. We dial back a little bit to that growth side from that aggressive growth, but we still have a pretty big target. We're still shooting for that 7 to 10% is that range that I'm usually working with folks with. When we get into retirement, this is where all the fun really begins. We pull back even more. Usually that is either the conservative growth or, depending on what other things we've got going on in our retirement side, it might be down to the income. But for the most part, it's a conservative growth world that I try to get folks in, where we're only taking about 60% of the ups and downs in the market. The goal in that is to have that 5 to 7% growth over a 10-year period, but it's also only to use about 4% of the value. So if I can grow 5 to 7 and I'm using 4, my money is not going to run out. I'm still growing it at a higher pace than I'm using it.
It's excellent.
But I'm also not taking the big ups and the big downs while I'm using it.
Right.
So there's kind of a reasoning behind that. And then we go down a little further. The income portfolio, really we're shooting for 3 to 5%. Most of that is going to come from that interest income, from the different fixed income pieces we've got, whether they're corporate bonds, high yield bonds. There might be some intermediate term pieces in there. All kinds of different stuff that we're going to use to try to generate that 3 to 5. The next few years, that's probably going to generate more because what we saw with interest rates, bonds are now actually paying 4, 5, and 6%. I actually saw a fund not long ago that had a yield over 9%. Went, okay, we'll get that while we can because in 2 years, that 9 is probably going to be back to 4.
Yeah, yeah.
So we work on that. And then that conservative income, you know, we're talking a lot more in the fairly stable money markets, long-term government bond kind of pieces in there because we're really only shooting for 1 to 3. Conservative income, really all we're doing is saying, you know what, I just want this to be kind of in line with what inflation is going on at that point. I wish we could always get it in line with the 8% inflation. That didn't exactly happen.
Yeah.
But we also don't see that massive pullback in there either. Again, we're only following about 20% of the market up and down. And what I tell folks is, if the market's up 20, you might be up 4. But if the market is down 20, you might only be down 4.
Right.
So you'll be happy to just operate in that little bitty space inside there.
Absolutely.
So all of this comes with having those discussions, right? Sitting down to say, what kind of roller coaster am I okay riding? My wife is not nearly as aggressive as I am. And back in that first quarter of 2020, I had to tell her, don't open the mail. Do not look at the statements. Yeah. I'll tell you when it's okay to look at the statements again. Because by the end of March 2020, our stuff was down 34%. But by July, she could open them up and look at them again. Because we were back up to even at that point. I said, okay, now you can open the mail and look. But up till then, don't look. Because it's not pretty.
And that's that's often the worst thing about investing is that you are all, if you're constantly looking at it, you're going to, you'll act on emotion when you shouldn't be.
Yeah. And I tell folks this, you know, a little bit in jest, because I am follically challenged out there. I say, if you pay attention to the markets every day and you're looking at investments every day, your hair's going to fall out.
Right.
So why don't you just let me do that?
Yes.
Because mine's already gone.
Right. And the best part is we have to reemphasize is that you are a fiduciary. So that's the most important part. You are acting on the best interest of your clients.
Yes. Yes. And the other piece of that is I'm not going to override what they want to do.
Exactly.
I will be that voice of reason. I will try to speak in and say, you know what? It's not a good idea to do this. It's not a good idea to do that. Or I would recommend doing this. But if they don't want to do it,
I'm not
going to do it.
Yeah.
Or if they want to, you know, say, you know what? No, I really do want to put 20% into precious metals. Okay, I will do that. But you better be sure it's in my notes that I recommended against it and you wanted this to go on.
Okay.
Because I have to act in the best interest
Absolutely.
Of that client. And, you know, especially on that emotional side, we do things that aren't always in our best interest.
Yeah. And people often act, you know, they listen to all these, as we talked about at the top of the show, they act, you know, all these people endorse these products. They say how wonderful it is and great, but they don't talk about the risks.
Right.
And enough.
Right. And that's actually why if you do a little quick Google search, you will see that Tom Brady is one of the folks who has been sued because he was a promoter for FTX.
Yeah. Right.
And he is personally being sued because he was promoting FTX.
And people trusted him.
Yep. And it went away.
Yeah.
Even though all he was a paid spokesman.
Right.
But because he was saying what he was saying and people acted on it and they lost literally millions of dollars.
Wow.
And okay, now we're going back after Tom because he told me, right? He's the GOAT. He was supposed to know all
right.
of this.
Right.
Not so
and
much.
And I believed him.
Exactly.
You know? Exactly. And sometimes those you know, when they do the endorsements, they obviously want the endorsement money, but they don't really realize what they're actually representing.
Exactly. And there's actually been legislation before Congress. It hasn't passed yet, but every year they bring it back again and again and again to where if you are making any financial recommendation, you are going to be considered a fiduciary.
Oh, wow.
Whether you have licensing or not. Had a discussion with a young man online several years ago, and he was, you know, pushing, you know, this particular cryptocurrency, and it's going to do this, and it's going to do that. And I said, you realize what you're doing, right? No, what?
You're persuading.
You're giving financial advice, telling people what's going to happen and getting them to buy things. And in front of Congress is legislation that says if they lose money, they can come after you.
Wow.
Because
personally.
You told them to go do it. And he went, oh.
I better not be doing
that. I've not seen him post anything about that since.
Yeah. Wow.
So.
Yeah. That is incredible.
It's crazy. You know, there are so many folks out there. And that's why it's so important to check on the folks that are out there giving the information out. Check on them. Check on the company. Check on everything you possibly can. You know, is the company registered with FINRA and the SEC? Does that company have anything going on in its background that would be, you know, a little sketchy?
A little shady.
Yes. You know, check on the individual who is making these recommendations. Are they licensed at the federal level? Now, yes, you can be an investment advisor licensed at the state level, and the state of Colorado doesn't have a way to check on that. But the only way you are regulated at the state level is if you have, I think it's less than $25 million in assets that you manage, which, you know, for folks starting out, if you're, you know, you got somebody starting out in the industry, they're probably not starting with $25 million in assets.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're a company that has been around a long time and they're not registered at the federal level, you have to ask yourself, why do they not have $25 million in assets that they're managing? It's, you know, company's been around 15, 20 years.
That's a great point. That is a really good point.
And one of the reasons is because they're not, they claim that they will be selling you investments. What they're actually selling you are contracts, mm-hmm. right? So annuities, anything that they manage in an annuity, not counted toward an investment because it's actually a contract. You don't hold the actual investments.
Right.
So a lot of different ways, a lot of different pieces to go through, to take a look at. And again, folks, anybody talking to you out there, go check them out. Brokercheck.finra.org. That's where you want to go. See, okay, is this person real? Are they licensed? How long have they been doing this? What licenses do they hold? All those different pieces. And you can even find out if there are any disclosures, and if so, what it was that was disclosed.
Oh.
Because any complaint filed with FINRA goes on there as a disclosure. Whether it was resolved in the advisor's favor or in the client's favor. And there are a lot of times where a client may not have necessarily understood what they were getting into, and they will file that complaint, and mm-hmm. you can read about that.
Okay.
And you can read, you know, the back and forth basically as to here was the complaint, here was the response from the advisor, you know, and how it was resolved. Was it resolved through a settlement? Was it thrown out? You know, whatever the case may be.
Right.
So just because there's a disclosure doesn't necessarily mean anything bad about that particular
advisor. How it was handled.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I know we covered a lot. Whole bunch of different things through there. We talked about, you know, all those different alternative investments out there, the precious metals, the REITs. We talked about the artwork, you know.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. I got to think I should probably start selling some of my kids' stuff. I've seen some of the Banksy stuff, and maybe I need to start selling some of my kids' stuff. And we really talked about understanding your asset allocation,
yes.
knowing what's in there in your investments, and just flat out making sure that you know what you're in.
Yeah.
You know, always knowing where your money is because it's your money. You should know what you've
Absolutely.
Got.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what it's doing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, folks, that is all the time we have for this week on Money Matters. We will be back in studio next week. Believe it or not, Dan, we are going to be continuing to talk about your money. We're going to talk about the listeners' money as well because your money matters. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.